The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Lots of Red Sox-centric topics tonight to go over. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Chris Felico, the Italian Stallion. And, yeah. So a lot of the non-live viewers will be catching us on Friday morning. Market kind of starting to heat up. We're starting to see some names kicked around. The Red Sox, Cubs, and Tigers are most closely linked to Alex Bregman. We were talking about this coming onto the show. I'm starting to get the vibe they really want him. I'm starting to get the vibe that Alex Bregman is their number one choice to come back. And the more I think about it, the more that noodles around in my head. I don't like it, and I don't think it's good enough.
Yeah, I hate to say it. I'm starting to get a similar vibe where, I mean, I think we've always kind of been in, and when I say we, not us, but the Red Sox have been in on Bregman, but I do think that there was this sentiment early that he didn't want the Red Sox. So I think that the interest level maybe started to shift and pivot more to Schwarber, Alonso, more specifically Alonso, since it's well known that Craig Breslow put it out there that we're looking for a power bat, in particular right-handed, which would match up well with Alonso. But the more that this starts to kind of materialize and the constant innuendos that we're getting from the media that are going back and forth as far as what we're looking to spend, you know, initial reports were, oh, the Sox are definitely going to spend more than last year. And initially going into last year, we had Bregman and we had Devers on the books. And we were, I believe, $8 million over the threshold. And then Spear comes out today and says, you know, I don't see the Sox going out there for two bats. And to me, like, to be in that place is just absolutely asinine, because even if we do go with Alonso and we don't go with Bregman, who's replacing Bregman's production? Because I'm not 100% confident that if you put Mayer there, that Mayer is going to hit 18 home runs and drive in, I forgot how many RBIs he had. I want to say 62. So, I mean, it'd be great, but I don't know, but I am getting that similar vibe, Terry, and it does concern me, because out of the two, I don't even think it should be a question that we should all be wanting Pete Alonso over Bregman. Like, yeah, it was nice to have Bregman for the intangibles as far as the development, but the money he's more than likely going to cost going into age 32 season, it just doesn't make any sense to me, because, you know, we were talking about it in the war room. He only hit 18 home runs, and granted, I recognize he missed 50-something games, but he had 18 home runs and 62 RBIs. But, you know, if you take a deeper dive, you know, I see a lot of people out there saying, like, oh, we got to bring back Bregman. It's good because it's a guaranteed 30 home runs. No, he's not. He has only hit 31 home runs twice, once in 2018, 31, and 41 in 2019. Since then, he had 18 last year, 26 the year before, 25 the year before, 23 the year before that, and then he was injured in 2021, he hit 12. Whereas if I look at Pete Alonso, 38 last year, 34 the year before that, 46, 40, 37, 16 in the COVID year, and then 53 in 2019. The guy has not hit 30 home runs. So what the hell are we doing if we're looking at Alex Bregman to be the power right-handed bat when you got Pete Alonso on the market, who I think is going to command less money?
Pete Alonso will definitely command less money than Alex Bregman. Here's where I'm at with this. All last winter, we were hearing that, yeah, Bregman might be a decent signing, but he's declining. His numbers are declining. His, you know, the defensive metrics, the power, all of that is starting to decline. And we end up signing him. And that's basically what you got. And then guess what? He got hurt fairly significantly, missed 45 to 48 games, somewhere in that span. So all of your concerns with Alex Bregman were essentially confirmed last season. The other thing kind of on my mind is when he was out with that quad injury, the Red Sox had their best run. That's when they heated up. That's when Raffaello was insane. Romy was killing it. Roman Anthony was kind of hitting his stride. Marcelo Meyer was up basically out of necessity because Bregman was gone. And, you know, he had his ups and downs. It wasn't terrible. I'm way more discouraged with Campbell than I am Meyer, at least from a performance standpoint. Campbell will probably stay healthy, but yeah. And then you get to the month of September and Bregman hit 216 with a 310 on base. Only two home runs, drove in 9 in the entire month of September, and that was in 22 games. So the dude was absolutely gassed in the final month of the season. And you could say he wasn't healthy, you know, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, he did have, you know, 5 or 6 weeks off, came back, and, you know, he was only operating at 80%, you know, by design, so he wouldn't re-aggravate anything. But I just don't see how bringing him back and then Alex Bregman being the only significant at bat, I don't know that that helps. I think you're right where you were even during the playoffs. I mean, you didn't have Anthony. That was the big difference. But I don't think Bregman is really a difference maker all by himself.
No, and that was going to be my next point is, you know, because I see people in the chat, yes, career-wise, Pete has a lower batting average. However, if you look at this last season, they both essentially had the same batting average. And then that's with Bregman missing a third of the season. So Pete, I think, was a point lower, and he played all 162 games, if my memory serves correct. Let's just look at it this way, okay? Going into the playoffs, we lost Roman Anthony, and we lost all of our juice. We lost our offense. And essentially, let's face it, going into that Yankee series, like, who did the Yankees really have to fear in our lineup? Trevor Story? Masataka Yoshida, who was the hottest hitter for us in the postseason? And it begs the question that if, because injuries are inevitable, and I hope Roman Anthony isn't the person who gets hurt next season, but someone will get hurt. And in a moment of crisis where someone does get hurt, and God forbid it's one of your hottest bats and someone that you do need, do you think a team like the New York Yankees is fearing Alex Bregman, which they didn't, and they had no reason to because he did nothing in all of September and really didn't do anything in the playoffs? Are they going to fear Pete Alonso? Like, that's the question. And I think it's a pretty clear answer.
Well, Pete Alonso, you know, is a bigger power threat. And based on what I see here, yeah, Alonso, okay, so they were even in batting average. They were just about even in war. 3.4 for Alonso, 3.5 for Bregman. Bregman gets bonus points probably because he's the better defender. Bregman had a OPS plus of 128. That's fairly significantly above average. Pete Alonso had a 144 OPS plus, 16 points higher, which is even more significant. Their on-base percentage is about the same. And you kind of touched on it You know, Pete Alonso played, it looks like the full 162 games. And guess what? 2024, 162 games.
Well, here, take this. Ready for this? So Bregman in the postseason, 102 games played, 19 home runs, 55 RBIs, a .239 batting average. Now, granted, that's with the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox. 9 seasons of postseason baseball for him, hence the disparity in games I'm about to say for Pete. Pete's only gone to the postseason twice, played in 16 games. Okay, so a much smaller sample size, almost a tenth. 5 home runs, 11 RBIs, .278 batting average. I mean, imagine if I times that by 10 or almost 10, the difference in disparity in production. And that's including Bregman's, like, the meat of his career where he was in his prime with the Houston Astros when they were, you know, we could say whatever, whether they're cheating, not cheating, doesn't matter, when they were winning World Series. And Pete was never on a team nearly as good or as talented. To be honest, their offense was probably the most talented on paper this year, and they didn't make the playoffs. And Pete Alonso, I mean, let's face it, last year they don't even get the chance to go and beat or lose the Dodgers if he doesn't have that absolute miraculous, heroic home run against the Brewers, Oppo. So
I think if Alex Cora had it his way, I think he wants Alex Bregman. And the thing that annoys me about that is, maybe he wants to be in a front office someday. Maybe he wants to be the chief baseball officer of either the Red Sox or another team in the future. And to lock Bregman up to a 5-year deal, I just think would be absolutely reckless at this point. And year one did not go well. It did not go well at all. And a lot of people like to lean on the fact that, you know, he's essentially like another coach in the clubhouse. He's like the big brother that's always looking after the younger players. Just today on Instagram, I think it was Instagram, it was one of the social media apps, you could see Bregman commenting, I think on one of Roman Anthony's posts, saying, "Hey, I saw your workout today." And then Garrett Crochet got involved, and I'm just seeing that, and it's just feeding into my suspicion that he's their guy. And like I said, for the money, it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough, and you're no better than you were last year if he's the only bat you're going to pursue. So
you're worse, to be honest. He's a year older. So
fair enough.
And then again, this is, I don't want this to be a hit session on Alex Berg, because the truth is the Red Sox can afford to get both. To be honest with you, if the Red Sox really wanted to, they could sign both and go out and trade for someone like Fernando Tatis. They won't, but could they? Of course they can. The Boston Red Sox, they print money. And to be honest with you, that's the bigger takeaway of this whole thing, because you know what? As Red Sox fans, we shouldn't even be having to have the conversation of, do we prefer Alex Bregman or Pete Alonso? It should be, we could be getting both guaranteed. And the other story should be, who's going to be behind Garrett Crochet, right? As far as the number two pitcher in this staff. And, you know, you made a good point about Alex Cora, because I definitely think there's aspirations to be an executive someday for him. You know, I've sat on calls because I am a season ticket holder of this damn team, and I have the benefit of being able to see like interviews. He was on with Tom Caron, and I sent some notes in the war room, and he was speaking a lot like he is an executive, which makes me think he has aspirations to be one. And you couldn't be any more accurate with the things that he says sometimes. Like, I think he has difficulty separating, like, there's a difference between being a manager and a GM. Manager, you got to be the nice guy, build on people's emotions and build them up and all that nonsense, right? And, like, you're somewhat of a borderline friend and companion to a certain degree, but still capable of making tough decisions. as a GM, there's no friends. You have to make the right decision every single moment, every single day to make your team better. And if we're just looking at this as face value, when you look at it, especially from a dollars and cents standpoint, which the GM has to watch, there's no argument to be made that Alex Bregman is the better choice, no matter what intangible you bring, just from a fiscal standpoint, never mind the production. And going back to the point of Alex Cora, the fact that he can't see that, even as a manager, never mind a general manager, president of baseball operations, whatever, is scary, because my biggest fear is one day he will be that for us as the Boston Red Sox. If things don't pan out with Breslow, or God forbid, you know, things do work out with Breslow, which would be great, but then he hires Cora to be his general manager, and then he has some sort of input and say. And that scares the absolute bejesus out of me at this point.
I look at Pete Alonso like the 2018 JD Martinez solution. I think they're both the same solution for what the teams needed. Your young core isn't quite established as the 2018 core was, you know, because they had Mookie, Benny, had both had, you know, a few seasons by then. So did Jackie Bradley. So we don't quite have the established young core. Perhaps this will be the first big year for that. But, you know, JD was the answer. He was the answer. And, you know, he was the stalwart in that part of the order, part of the lineup. And I don't think you win a World Series in 2018 without JD Martinez, who had some big moments in that postseason as well. And so, you know, and then you pivot back to Bregman. I don't feel good about anything, really. You know, you're going to have decent defense over there, but let's look at where the bar was. Rafi Devers was the bar. You know, there's other elite defenders out there, you know, Matt Chapman, to name one. I think Nolan Arenado still defensively is a very good player, even though the bat's starting to disappear. But Bregman's not that anymore. He had a 0.5 defensive war, according to Baseball Reference anyway. I was trying to pull up his defensive run saved. I'm guessing that metric isn't going to be super great. But you can come up with a solution at third base. And perhaps it's going to be Marcelo Meyer, who will absolutely be a better defender there than Alex Bregman if he can stay healthy. But we don't know if Bregman's going to stay healthy. I like Alonso a lot better. I like Schwarber a lot better, quite frankly. And, you know, Alex Cora likes his guys. You know, I would want Schwarber if I'm Alex Cora. And if this is a glimpse of him one day being the chief baseball officer, you're going to have a lot of dead money on your books. You go back to 2018. Yeah, we won the World Series, but you had Sandoval on the books. You had Hanley Ramirez still technically on the books, who was DFA'd earlier that year. You had Dustin Pedroia on the books. And in Pedroia's case, that was a thank you contract. To give him an 8-year deal after the 2013 season, after he, you know, he didn't really demonstrate a strong record of health, that was pretty reckless. And I don't want to, I don't quite get those red flags with Bregman, but I don't feel good about it. And here's the other thing that's starting to concern me more, you know, day after day. Bregman and Alonso are both represented by Scott Boras. And I'm not really worried about Boras is going to squeeze every penny out of us, because I just don't think there's a world where a contract for Bregman and a contract for Alonso gets insane. I don't think that there's a world for that. But what I worry about is Scott Boras can manipulate the market. He can stonewall teams. He can maneuver these guys. And I really think he's trying to push Bregman onto the Red Sox. I think that's his that's his plan. That's what he wants to do. He wants Bregman back in Boston. You know, he can kind of tug on the heartstrings. I'd say at least 50% of the fan base is all for it. And he can find another team for Alonso. The Yankees kind of need a, well, I shouldn't say they kind of need a first baseman, because I guess Ben Rice has been doing a pretty good job, but they can find a home for Alonso. So I'm just worried about the manipulation there. How difficult is Scott Boras going to be in terms of the Red Sox getting exactly what they need?
Well, that, I agree with you. I think it's weird because Bregman's the one commanding more money, but I think Scott Boras is smart enough to recognize the diminishing value on Bregman long-term and the fact that there's only a few teams, the Red Sox included, who are going to be willing to even pay close to what he wants and is going to command. And I think he's seeing the way that the market is going, especially with these qualifying offers being accepted that no one expected on some of these players, that there's going to maybe be less teams than he even thought that are out there that may have been willing to spend that money. Whereas Pete, who honestly should be commanding more money than Bregman based off productivity, is not going to be able to get it. So, and that's going to open up the amount of suitors that are going to be in play for Pete Alonso. I mean, and just the way that Scott Boras is talking, like with all the jokes and hints of like with the coffee jokes and beans, whatever, with Boston and Bregman, it does seem like there's a big force where he's trying to create this narrative where it's almost like the Red Sox need Bregman more than Bregman needs the Red Sox, because I think he thinks the Red Sox are dumb enough, which they may very well be, to fall for it. I mean, if Cora was running the operation, he'd already have a 10-year deal. So, yeah, I mean, that does scare me. And, you know, I think back to your point, I would agree that Alonso, a good comparison would be JD Martinez. The difference is I don't think the rest of the team, like you said, is in the same position, because we don't have that Devers where it's like he's a young part of your core, but he's already been in the league for a year or two and established himself. And I agree, whether we're talking about Benintendi, Mookie Betts, and JBJ, they were all more well-established. Although I will argue, if you remove injuries, because that's the big bugaboo with this core, you've got Mayer, Roman Anthony's now been hurt. Christian Campbell is mentally hurt. The upside for this core, I think the ceiling is higher if all goes well than that core. Because JBJ, nice player. But, I mean, we already kind of have JBJ. Maybe an even better version in sit-down Rafaela. Benintendi, I mean, you want to talk about a flame out. If either Mayer or Christian Campbell were to become 70% of what they were supposed to, they'll be better than Benintendi. And then Mookie Betts, while I don't, it would be hard for me to say that Roman Anthony is going to be as good as Mookie Betts, we already have him locked up. So like the biggest concern we had about Mookie Betts during that time was, God, he's amazing, but like, can we re-sign him? Which we couldn't. And then we traded him for nothing. We already have Roman Anthony for the next decade. So if he stays healthy, it's a win. So I do believe the ceiling is higher with this core. They just got to stay healthy, and they got to materialize.
As I was mentioning on the most recent episode, you could sign your big bat, but you could also, in addition to that, you can trade for one as well. And one example I gave was Isaac Paredes from the Astros. They've got a surplus of infielders. We have a surplus of outfielders. So I think we're good dance partners. I think ideally you would trade Duran in that case, possibly. Or maybe it doesn't even need to be Duran for a guy like Paredes. But Duran, I think, we think is the most expendable one. Or you could go to the Diamondbacks, see if they're willing to peddle Ketel Marte. He's a second baseman. You could keep him right there in Boston. I don't know if he's capable of playing third. So they can explore that. But there is a fit for a guy like Ketel Marte. Now, the downside to that is I think they're going to want Willier Abreu in that case, because I think Marte is more of a premium player. He's got years of control left. Abreu has more time left than Duran, at least by a year or so, if I'm not mistaken. So you can do that. You can sign one and then you can go acquire one. And, you know, we mentioned Tatis and, you know, I'm going to keep doing it until opening day. But yeah, there's that. Now, let me ask you this. What are you more concerned about, the lineup or the rotation? I think there's stuff to be desired with both, but if one of those areas of the team is going to sink us, which one is it? To me, it's the lineup.
Yeah, it's at face value, it's easy to say the pitching because Giolito, for a bulk of the middle of the season, really helped carry with Bayo a lot of that success. However, once he disappeared, like, it wasn't the pitching that exited us from the playoffs. It was our lineup. And I mean, that was the biggest struggle all season. And until you, and even if you do sign Bregman, you're right back to square one, right? So that's best case scenario. If you sign Bregman, we're back to square one, which was a struggle. And until we do that, it's 100% a crapshoot, because until you improve the lineup, we're right now a lesser team from a lineup perspective than we were last year. Whereas with pitching, I could make the argument that with the struggles at the end of the season or at the beginning of the season for Giolito and then him missing the end of the season, there could be net positives with some of these guys coming up. And, you know, Bayo, I think, is going to be able to repeat what he did last year because, you know, he had a little bit of blips of up and down. And then in the playoffs, you know, he wasn't so hot, but, you know, I could see him doing that again. Even if he was forced to be a number two starter and we didn't upgrade the rotation. And as long as Crochet stays healthy, like, I think we're okay. And I think it's no doubt it's the lineup at this point.
I think it is as well. I trust that they're going to get at least a number two starter, if not better. And they've got a lot of different avenues to make that happen. There's a lot of names out there. And if the trade market is not realistic because teams might be asking for a lot, well, then you can go sign a free agent. And Framber Valdez, not going to cost a ton of money, probably 120 to 140. I don't know what Ranger Suarez is going to cost. He's kind of my guy if they do go the free agent route. That's the guy I want them to sign. But it's definitely the lineup that concerns me here. And I don't know. I find myself getting more and more anxious by the day. Like, I just want closure. I want to know what we're dealing with.
Well, Ranger Suarez is projected to get 5 years, 115. And it seems like the biggest players, according to the writers, is Blue Jays, Giants, Cubs. Two people have the Cubs, so I guess the Cubs will be the favorites. Although, after seeing some of the reports out there, it seems like the Cubs are not going to be spending a lot of money because they did not expect Shota Imanaga to pick up or take that qualifying offer, which now put them in a bit, which is laughable. Like, we're talking about less than $23 million is going to stop them from spending money as the Chicago Cubs. But hey, listen, I'm not going to complain. That's more people out there to leave the Sox to bid on. But yeah, I mean, Ranger Suarez would be a good option. But even then, like, if he, I still feel like if he's the number two guy that we end up with, doesn't that still kind of feel like a little bit of a letdown? Like, if he ends up being the guy and then we sign a Bregman and then don't get Alonso.
Well, I'm pretty optimistic about Connelly early, provided that we don't trade him. But I like Suarez. You know, he had a 3.20 ERA. It was 12-8 last year, pitched in 26 games. And I'm scrolling down. I want to see what his
post. While you're doing that, let me ask you a question while you're looking that up.
Yeah.
Would you rather sign Ranger Suarez or trade for Joe Ryan?
It's close. If you can get Ranger Suarez, who is turning 30 this year, on a 5-year deal for less than 150, if the projections are right, that's what I want.
115.
Yeah, no, I said 150 just in case, okay. Just in case they're off. But I can live with 150. That'd be 20. Well, on a 6-year deal, it'd be 25 per. But here's why I like Ranger Suarez. What do you think his postseason ERA is in 11 games?
3-2.
1.48.
Oh, okay.
He's got a 9.3 strikeout per nine. That's not off the charts, but it is above league average. And
listen, when your ERA is that low, I mean, strikeouts per inning, I could live with.
He's a big game pitcher. That's what I'm getting at. John Lackey was never an ace in Boston. Nobody ever even tried to attach that label to him, but he got it done in the month of October. Because he was a big game pitcher. John Lester was a borderline ace. You know, I'm not going to die on the hill of whether he was or he wasn't, but also a big game pitcher. So that's why I like Ranger Suarez. And, you know, if we go the free agent route, he's definitely my guy. Joe Ryan is going to cost you both prospects and money. He's got a good pedigree. I'll be fine with it. I'm not going to go off the tracks because we make that move. But I just think, you know, a guy like Suarez is, there's not a lot of risk there.
Well, now that you shared that stat, I actually would agree with you because when we were going into it, I was going to say it was a disappointment. I'd rather have Joe Ryan than sign Ranger Suarez. I did not recognize that his ERA in the postseason was that low. And now knowing that, I also for some reason thought he was 32, not 30. And those 2 years make a difference, especially when you're talking about 5 or 6 year deals. The fact that you do get to keep your prospects, I would be all for that because I still think, regardless whether we end up with Bregman, Alonso, unless we end up with both, and even if we do get both, I still think in the next season or two, we're going to need to add a big bat, whether that's a Fernando Tatis and this whole thing with the Padres materializes with them potentially selling. You know, I think some, you know, you're talking about Ketel Marte. And, you know, the one thing I would say is you were saying they would maybe want Abreu. I actually think they would want Duran because all the reports I'm seeing out there is that there's a lot of front offices that are like very high on Duran for whatever reason. I don't know if they just like his game, the value and the way he plays. So I do think, because I've seen his name attached to the Diamondbacks, if there was some sort of trade for Ketel Marte. But one of the biggest frustrations, too, because we were talking about like the mixed messaging with the Red Sox. We wondered about mixed messaging. It was almost a foregone conclusion Scooble was getting traded because the Tigers weren't going to pay him. That was what all the indicators were. And even to the point where you see these analysts and these writers being like, well, if the Red Sox, what would they have to give up? You saw a ton today. What would the Yankees have to give up? And then right after lunchtime, it's like, no, I don't think the Tigers are going to hold on to Scooble. It's like, can anyone just make up their damn mind of what the hell is going on? Because I'm with you. I mean, even outside of a Red Sox perspective, I am so anxious. I just want something to happen. So there needs to be a domino that falls, even if it's not to the Red Sox, to just kick this damn thing off. Because the more the days pass, the more anxiety I have that we're going to end up just doing absolutely a nothing burger.
I'm willing to take Breslow at face value. And I think they want to win, but can they execute?
Well, that's my concern. It's more the days pass and you start getting into where it becomes bidding wars and you have to either get creative if it's a trade or spend the money. That's what worries me. Like that's why I respect the Mariners. Like they identified, they wanted Josh Naylor. He's probably right on the cusp of a top 10 free agency. I'd say he's probably like a 11 to 15 this year, somewhere in that mix, maybe in the middle. There and they identified, yeah, he's not on the top of the list of free agents, but he fits us, produce for us. Let's give him a fair deal. They literally gave him, I think, $2.5 million more than what he was projected to get. And the deal was done for the exact freaking amount of years. So, like, just you got to respect it. Like, I just wish more teams would do that. Identify your guy, write him a check for what's fair, and get it done.
And, you know, he's getting 5 years, $92.5 million. And I look at Alonso and I'm like, well, how much more is he worth? than a guy like Naylor. Now, Naylor only hit 20 home runs, so I guess you're getting more of a power premium there. Naylor does hit for better average, was, hit 295 this past year. OPS plus 128, which is, I think, exactly what Alex Bregman's OPS plus was. Naylor gets on base at about the same clip as Alonso.
He's a better defender too.
353. Better defender, same position.
Yeah.
And so he got 92.5. So I don't know how much more Pete Alonso is worth.
How old is Naylor? 29?
Yeah, just turned, or is he about to? Let's see. 28.
He might be going. So he's going to 29 years. So I know Pete's older, but listen, even though his defense is better, we both know like what sells tickets is the power, the home runs. Like that's the flash is going to definitely get Pete a little bit more money. If he got 592.5, I think for Pete, especially since he's been so consistent with his production when it comes to power, I would say a 5-year 120, 125.
I think that gets it done. JD Martinez signed for 5 years, 110. You can say, well, inflation since then, but Josh Naylor essentially just got the same exact deal Pablo Sandoval signed for. So, and that's even older than the Martinez deal. So that's why I'm saying that the Alonso deal isn't going to be insane. There's not going to be an intense bidding war. And if the Red Sox covet him, and they should, you can't screw it up. You can get Pete Alonso.
If they do it now, I agree with you. Where I do think it could be a bidding war is if some of these big names go out there and a team that was expecting to sign them fall off to these unexpected teams that no one saw coming, or a team like the Yankees just decide they want to be the Yankees again and start spending crazy money. That's where I do think a guy like Pete could end up getting more this time around, because the last two go-arounds he hasn't. I think it's a different scenario, especially people are going to look to lock up a fair deal before the lockout, because we all know coming out of the lockout, no one knows what's going to look like, but it could be a position where these guys are getting even more money. And now, do I think that's going to be the case? Maybe not. But who knows? Especially the Dodgers. I don't think the Dodgers are going to sign Pete, but they're going to try and sign everyone they can before they outlaw what the Dodgers are doing.
I think the Dodgers would be more likely to sign Kyle Tucker, honestly. 100%. Yeah. Where do you think Josh Naylor is from? Best guess without looking.
I don't know. And I don't want to. I've already got Canada hating me. I don't need any more countries hating me. Where is he from?
He's from Canada.
Yeah, there you go.
That was your chance to redeem yourself.
That's it. That's part of my identity now, is everyone in Canada hates me. That's fine. I could live with it.
Yeah. I thought Naylor, he's got a slightly darker complexion, so I thought perhaps he could be, from one of the Caribbean type countries. Obviously, I'm way off, but he went to high school in Ontario, Canada, and was born in Mississauga, Canada. I'm assuming that's probably in the same province, but yeah, just a little surprised to see that. But and I like him. I liked him as a Guardian. I rooted for the Guardians a lot because of Francona, but he's a lefty, and so that's why I never really coveted him like I do an Alonso type guy. So all right, not much else to get into. Connor Wong will make $1.25 million. That is just simply his ARB1 year. They bought it out, so he won't go to arbitration this season with the Red Sox. So we'll see what develops. I think we'll be back Sunday, most likely, with the next installment of our Major League Baseball trade rumors you know, top 50. I think we're at 11 through 20, so we're getting up there towards the top where the sexier free agents are. So if nothing more develops, then that probably will be what gets recorded on Sunday. And I don't think we were just talking about, you know, when the signings could happen. I don't think we're really going to see those big guys come off the market until the week of the winter meetings. I think by Thursday of that week, at least two of the big three bats, not counting Kyle Tucker, two of the big three that we might be interested in, I think will probably be off the board at that point. Hopefully one of them with us, but we'll see what happens. You know, it's an unpredictable time of the year, so we'll be back to cover what does develop, and if not, we'll be pushing some other content. In the meantime, everyone have a good Friday. Take care.